It's Lake Effect from WUWM Milwaukee's NPR. Tomorrow, WUWM, in partnership with American Public Media, will host Call to Mind Live, Youth Incarceration and Mental Health. At the event, people who were incarcerated when they were young will share their experiences and how it impacted their mental health. Mental health advocates will also talk about the work being done in Wisconsin's youth prison facilities to address these needs. One of those facilities is Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake. The state's deadline for closing the facility has passed, and it's not clear when it will be shut down or what the alternatives will be. There are unique mental health challenges for the young people being housed there, and American Public Media's mental health correspondent, Elisa Roth, explored some of those ahead of the Call to Mind event. She joins me now to talk more about what she's learned. Elisa, welcome to Lake Effect. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
So the facilities at Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake have been open for quite some time, you know, since 1970. But things have changed there over the last 50 years. So what does it look like now, today?
Okay, so for starters, there are a lot fewer kids being held there. Even 20 years ago, there were more than 800 people there. As of last week, there were 49 boys and 12 girls, so just over 60 kids total. There are a lot of reasons for that, but probably the biggest is that we've just seen an overall drop in the number of incarcerated youth all across the country. And that, of course, is a good thing. The other thing is that there have been a lot of changes in the wake of the various scandals and lawsuits at Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake, but I know we're going to talk about that in a bit.
For sure, yeah, and we could totally have a different conversation on that topic alone. But before we get to some of those points, I do want to get into the makeup of the youth who are held at these facilities. So where are most of them from?
The vast majority, like half of them, are from the Milwaukee area. Dane County, so Madison and Kenosha County, are distant second and third. And then the rest are a smattering from the rest of the state. This is important, though, because, as you know, Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake are a good 3 hours plus drive from Milwaukee. So even before COVID complicated everything, it was very, very hard for families to visit. And we know that having people, especially kids, stay connected to their communities is really the best way to make sure they do well when they get out. So part of all the talk about where to send these kids once Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake are finally shut down is to find ways to keep them closer to home.
So you did mention scandals and lawsuits. So can you remind listeners briefly what was going on there?
Well, we could talk about this for hours, but it was a mess on a number of fronts, from the mental health staff to the ways that the kids were being treated to just the state of the facilities. From people I talked to, there was also really a sense that Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake were being operated very much as correctional facilities. One of the people I talked to is Orisa Washington. She's a psychologist who worked there until last summer. And she says that when she started back in 2016, she really didn't see the kids very often.
You see certain clients like once every month. You see certain clients once every 2 weeks, almost very reflective of like the adult or corrections population.
Another psychologist who used to work there told me his client load was so high that even if he had spent all day, every day seeing clients, he never would have made it through all of them in a week. And of course, he never had that much time to see clients. Kids were also regularly punished by being put into solitary confinement for really long stretches. Officers would use pepper spray on them. There were a number of consequences when all these things started coming to light. There was a multi-year federal investigation that actually ended without any charges. But there was also a class action lawsuit that the Wisconsin ACLU and the Juvenile Law Center filed, and that resulted in a federal monitor being put into place to keep an eye on things. And there were a number of other lawsuits, too, that were filed on behalf of kids who'd been held there, and those have cost the state millions of dollars.
So the facilities were supposed to be shut down in July of this year, which was already on top of an extension. But following all of these events that brought these conditions to light, what do things look like these days as these facilities remain open for now?
Well, one of the things I mentioned was the federal monitor. She's been coming in since January of 2019, so we're coming up on, 3 years. Her last report came out in July, back when the facilities should have been shut down. She talked about, in that report, she talked about things getting better overall, but she's still worried about a number of things, including the use of solitary confinement. One of the things the class action settlement did was to seriously limit how solitary can be used there. And one of the lawyers from the Juvenile Law Center, her name is Kate Burdick, she told me that she and her colleagues are worried about how solitary is still being used.
But our concerns are that they may be using it when it's not a concern about self-harm, and it's, or it's not a serious self-harm, or it's nothing imminent.
And that in particular, you know, finding ways around solitary confinement is something that we see both in juvenile and adult facilities all over the country and have for a long time. It's also probably worth reminding listeners here that solitary confinement is really hard on people's mental health. It can make symptoms of mental illness much worse in people who have it, but it can also even trigger symptoms in people who didn't have them before.
Right. And on top of that, we're talking about youth mental health, which is also something that has specific needs. And you talked about how few mental health services were there in the facility before. Has that aspect of it improved? What is it like now?
You know, my caveat before I really answer that is that it's always hard to tell from the outside what things really look like on the inside. And the Federal Monitor doesn't address mental health care in and of itself in her reports because mental health was only tangential to the issues the class action lawsuit looked at. But Arisa Washington, the psychologist who left this summer, said things were much better by the time she left. She said that mental health staff were really involved in all aspects of the kids' lives. And that's similar to what I heard from Tracy Johnson, who heads psychological services there.
From the moment the youth arrives, we assign them a clinician, so that psychology staff member will follow them throughout their stay at the facility, and that will be their individual therapist.
Tracy Johnson told me that there are now 16 mental health staff. One of the things that's happened is that the number of clinicians has stayed about the same, even though the number of people being held there has fallen tremendously. So it's actually really helped the caseload and the staff-to-client ratio.
You know, there are so many issues and challenges that we see at Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake. So on top of what we've discussed, what else did you see? What stood out to you?
I mean, as you said, there are so many challenges. One of the things that we haven't talked about, which is really a big systemic challenge, but important nonetheless, is the racial disparities. Wisconsin is one of the worst in the country for racial disparities in its correctional system, both at the adult and juvenile levels. There's a very disproportionate number of African Americans and Native Americans being held in the prisons. Arisa Washington, the psychologist who left this summer, is African American, and she talked to me about how few African Americans there are on staff in any capacity at Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake. And she talked about how important she felt it was for the kids to see and to talk to a person who looks like her. The other big question is what comes next?
Well, exactly. So what does come next?
So as you said earlier, there was actually a law signed back in 2018 that said Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake were supposed to shut down last summer. That obviously didn't happen, and it's really not clear when it will. Part of the challenge there is figuring out where these kids are going to go once these facilities are shut down. There's a push to build facilities closer to the cities where kids can go, but that costs money, obviously. And overall, a lot of people would just like to see these kids getting care in the community in such a way that they can stay living at home.
So as these facilities have remained open, I'm curious, you know, even pending an eventual shutdown, based on the conversations you've had with people who had or are currently working at these facilities, is their commitment to offering better support for these kids there, whether it's mental health or other accommodations at these facility, does that remain steadfast despite an uncertain future, not knowing whether they're going to be shut down or not?
Yeah, in talking to people, it really felt like things are moving forward there in terms of taking care of the kids. They've recently brought in a specialist to teach staff and kids how to use something called DBT, Dialectical Behavior Therapy. It's a specialized therapy that helps kids respond to a whole range of scenarios, and it requires that all the staff, as I understand it, that the whole staff, whether it's teachers or therapists or anybody else, really understand how this therapy works and help the kids engage with it. So there's definitely a sense that things are moving forward.
Has there been anything else that stuck out to you as you were reporting this story?
You know, it sounds crass when we're talking about children's lives, but money was a really big one. The state has spent literally millions of dollars to settle these many, many lawsuits that have come up. And no matter what you think about these facilities, you know, whether they should exist or not and how they're doing and all the rest, they're really expensive to run. Under the budget for fiscal year 2022, counties pay the state $1,154 a day per kid. That's more than $400,000 a year. You multiply that by the current population, and we are talking about a lot of money.
Well, you and I both know the stories surrounding these facilities are by no means done and over, but listeners can keep an eye out for your report during Morning Edition tomorrow. And you mentioned the DBT training. We'll also be having a DBT certified therapist on our Call to Mind live event on Wednesday to talk about what that is in these facilities and how people can learn more about it. So in the meantime, Elisa, I want to thank you so much for joining me today and sharing your work.
Well, thank you for having me.
Elisa Roth is the mental health correspondent for American Public Media. She joined me ahead of our event, Call to Mind Live, Youth Incarceration and Mental Health, which will take place Wednesday evening at 7 p.m. You can find information on how to attend at wuwm.com/calltomindlive. You can hear more interviews like this one by visiting the Lake Effect page at wuwm.com.